Hello and welcome to Reasonably Fit. We're Jason and Lauren Pack, and this is the podcast for anyone who wants a more thoughtful and grounded approach to health and fitness.
Our guest joining us today is Dr. Jen Fraboni,
aka Doc Jen Fit on Instagram.
Jen is a doctor of physical therapy who specializes in helping people overcome chronic pain and maximize physical performance. She's the founder of Jen.Health, the co-host of the Optimal Body podcast, and a member of the Women's Health Magazine Advisory Board. In today's episode, Jen shares the importance of working on mobility, ways that we can make mobility exercises more seamlessly fit into our daily lives, and how proper breathing can be a game changer when it comes to how we move. We know you're going to get so much out of today's episode, so let's get right into it. So I wanted to start with our connection, which is that you were a gymnast growing up.
I know, that's fun. I love to, it's just like this instant connection when you know someone else can like, it has lived that life of the gymnast.
Can I guess your best event?
Sure.
Was it beam?
It was.
I knew it. Oh. Just the way that you move, I'm like, it was my worst event. I'm like, she just looks like she would be so good at beam.
Oh my gosh, I'm thoroughly impressed with that. You just got that.
Thank you. I was a floor and vault all the way, so beam and bars were my nightmare. And I was also, this is kind of moving into your level of expertise, I was probably the least flexible gymnast I knew, definitely least flexible on my team. I had a 200-pound coach who would legitimately sit on me in a center split, which we know now as professionals is not actually a way to help someone get more flexible, but he would just sit on me and I wouldn't go anywhere. Like I was stuck and everybody was always making fun of me that I had like was so inflexible. Was flexibility something that came really naturally to you, or was it something that you had to work on?
So interestingly enough, like my sagittal plane, I would say, or frontal too, I guess. So splits, no problem. But like butterfly, my knees would be like up to my ears.
Oh, interesting.
So it's so funny how rotation for me was just never a thing, which makes sense because then I got some hip injuries, some impingement stuff that happened later on, which just continues to make so much sense. But it didn't click, obviously, until I was older. But yeah, flexibility for the most part was pretty easy for me. But now I look at one of my nieces. She's just such a natural. She's naturally super bendy. Like I was never that flexible where she can just automatically like touch her heels to her forehead kind of thing. You know, she's just all over the place, so bendy. And I'm like, wow, you would. And she's fearless and gets cues and coaching and everything so fast. I'm like, oh. She would have been so amazing.
I know. We talk about all the time. We have two kids and we put our son, who's almost four, we put him in gymnastics for like a session and he was okay with it. I mean, he was like kind of indifferent, but our daughter is like, she's almost one. She's like climbing all over everything already. She loves when she will be sitting on her lap and she throws herself backwards because she wants to go into extension and just like smiles. And I'm like, oh, we're in trouble. Like she is going to be a gymnast. Yeah. It's like so clear already. So it'll be interesting to see what comes of that.
I know.
I was actually listening to one of your podcasts earlier and I forget who the interviewer was, but you're basically explaining to them that by the time someone is 3 or 4 years old, you kind of have a sense of, you know, can they make it for, you know, a good amount of time, or will it not be kind of the right sport for them just because of the overall demands of the sport? And I feel like if you are not a parent and not have a child, it's kind of tough to understand, like, how can you tell a 3 or 4 year old that they can't do it? But it's like, you know, knowing our son, or like, you know, it's probably isn't the right, he can do it if he wants, but it's probably not a long-term thing, but you can definitely tell for sure.
It's pretty crazy. And gymnastics, I feel like, has only gotten stricter in that way and more tough. Like I definitely started late 7, 8. That's not heard of, you know, I think I was like 7 starting at YMCA, didn't even have a competitive team. And then they realized, okay, she's too good for that. Let's put her on a competitive team. Then I was 8 with like the 6-year-old because.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because I was already competing at 7. So that is. Yeah. Like,
that's Lauren, when did you start?
3 or 4.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. In those little like, you know, tumble classes. But then by the time I think I was recruited for the team at 6, which seemed like normal to me at the time. And now I'm like, you're recruiting a 6-year-old and like kind of prepping them to have this like lifelong affliction with a sport, but that is how
it's
it goes.
True. Yeah. Yeah. It is. Like, I remember coaching and we would be looking at the 3 and 4 year olds and who's catching on and who looks like they can get it. And 5 and 6 really like hones it in. It's crazy.
It is crazy. So you mentioned briefly that you had an injury. Did you have, I mean, every gymnast has injuries, but were there times where you were sent to physical therapy? And was that potentially some of the reasons that you started to find your path in toward physical therapy?
So honestly, no.
Oh, wow.
Which I know. I think it just wasn't something that was very popular for kids back then. It wasn't talked about. It wasn't as known. Nowadays, like when I started coaching, then it was like, oh, your kid goes to physical therapy or this is happening. And it was more of a regular process. But when I was there, it was just like, oh, you sit out and you condition while you're watching your team do their practice, or you tape your ankle, or, you know, it was just kind of sitting out, waiting it out, taping it up and trying to go when you're ready, which is awful and not, you know, what I recommend. I mean, even when I would have hip injuries on, so I couldn't really split on my right side because it really hurt my hip flexor. So then I would split on my left. I just switched what was happening in my routine. So pretty wild to know that that was the experience back then. And I really just got led into physical therapy. One, I wanted to go into kinesiology because that was the only thing in college that seemed interesting to me. Oh, study of human movement. I love that. Let me go into that. Yeah. And then through that, I started working at a physical therapy office, and I just loved watching a therapist watch movement or feel movement in their hands. And so that's where it really led me down this path of like, okay, no matter how much it is for grad school, I think this is what I want to do. And this is the path I'm going to go down.
So you graduated from PT school. What was your first job out of PT school?
Actually, while I was in PT school, that's when I started teaching Pilates.
Oh, cool. Okay.
And I actually didn't have a Pilates certification. No one come after me, okay? But I put under the wing of someone who was like, she was allowing coaches to go for free because she was doing it at the gym that I coached at. And so I would show up every single time there. She had like no one else. And so I basically got privates and kind of got led by her. And then I got asked to go to a chiropractic clinic and kind of train under someone for the reformer. And so I got mat and reformer just being led by people. Mm-hmm. So kind of almost having a certification of sorts, but not formally. And I did that through PT school. And then once I graduated, I just knew that I had started doing calisthenics and everything as well in LA. And so I knew I wanted to go to LA. I didn't live in LA at the time. I was about an hour away. And I just knew, you know, this community is amazing. This is where I want to be around. This is where I see myself. And so I got a job at a physical therapy office in Santa Monica. And it was great. It was what I wanted or what I thought I wanted. I had mentorship. I had you know, flexibility in terms of who I saw and how I treated patients. So it was a great place to get started, and it really helped to just continue to build my confidence in what I did after that.
Yeah. I think it's really interesting what you said about the Pilates, like you didn't have a certification, but you had basically a one-on-one mentorship for a long period of time, which is way more valuable, honestly, if we're really thinking about it, more valuable than a weekend long certification. So it's always interesting when it comes down to like credentials and like experience versus letters behind your name. And like letters are important and credentials are important to an extent, but also experience should not be taken for granted. And just because you didn't have a very specific Pilates certification doesn't mean you weren't getting educated by somebody who is really able to tailor the experience specifically to you and really mentor you. So
yeah. And the reason I would say I didn't pursue it more is because I was like, well, I'm in school for DPT. Like, I'm going to get my doctor of physical therapy degree. I'm going to know a lot about the body, I feel like. Yeah. And I know that I didn't want to do Pilates long term. If I had chosen to do Pilates rehab, which I thought of for a little bit, or go on and have Pilates more integrated into my practice. It was 100% something I would have pursued deeper. It was just something that was a job on the side of going to physical therapy school. And I felt like, well, I'm continuing to learn about the body, and what a cool way to actually put that in practice is seeing people and being able to help and adjust as I could as I'm continuing to learn.
Yeah, that makes sense. So then what made you take the less traditional route? Because typically people do go to DPT school and then they get a job as a PT. And if anything, like when we talk to younger trainers, and not even necessarily younger trainers, but trainers who have been working for 3 to 5 to 8 years, a lot of times they feel like the only possible next step in taking their career to the next level is opening their own facility. But it's never like going online. I mean, it is a little bit more now, but typically it's just opening their own facility. And we feel like with PTs, a lot of time it's the same thing. Like go to DPT school, get a PT job. You're working for a few years and then maybe you open your own clinic. But you took a much less traditional route than that. Do you want to talk about what led you there and who inspired you to do that?
Yeah. So it was funny, like going into physical therapy school, I always said business, that's over my head. I'll never work for myself, never be an entrepreneur. That's not my journey. So really just interesting. That's like the mindset that I had going in, and here I am now. But when I was in physical therapy school in my last year, my boyfriend at the time, he had someone come to his house and work on him. And she was a chiropractor, but she would take all her table and her tools. And from my point of view, what she was doing was more physical therapy type sessions. She would hardly adjust him or manipulate him. It was more manual, hands-on, and then exercise. And I was like, wait, what? You have my job and you're doing it on your own and you're doing it in people's houses and setting your own schedule. And I was like so fascinated by that. And I even remember in our quote unquote business class in PT school, which was really quite a joke. I asked, because this was just right when direct access was happening with physical therapy, meaning that patients can go straight to a physical therapist rather than getting a referral from a physician, which has always been the thing with chiropractors. And that's why I think they've done such a great job in marketing themselves, because you don't have to go to your physician before you go to a PT, where traditionally that was the route for PT. So now we have this direct access. Now we can build our own, we can get clients to come straight to us. Why not do it and create your own schedule? And I remember asking this in class and saying, you know, I know this chiropractor and she's doing her own thing, taking her own table and going to her own clients. Can't we do that? And they said, no, that would never work. And I'm sitting here with a class of 60 something people saying, you just told me that would never be possible. Are you kidding me?
And you're like, when I'm seeing it happening.
Access? Yeah. Exactly. I just like, it was mind boggling to me. And the only person who came in to talk about opening a clinic, he was like, it takes 5 years to even start to make money. I can't have my relationship and have my business. It was the most, like, you would never want to open a clinic after listening to this inspiring speech from this physical therapist about opening your own clinic. It was awful. So it was just really interesting to get that point of that perspective. And from that moment, I just thought, but it is possible and it can be done. And so in my last year, I bought a table, because I knew I'd want to start seeing what that looked like. And I reached out to a owner of a CrossFit gym in Santa Monica, and I asked if they had a physical therapist working on staff, and they didn't. And so I said, hey, I get off early on Tuesdays and Thursdays and I can come Saturdays. Like, can I start to build my own schedule? And I'd leave cards. And he was like, yeah. And so I started doing that, which is a little mind-boggling to look back and think of. Like, I was working full-time in the clinic, and then I was building my own schedule at the CrossFit, and then I was also posting every day on social media and building social media. It was all happening.
Yeah.
It was a lot, but I'm very grateful for that journey, because it led me to proving to myself that it's possible and I could leave the clinic.
You know, for someone who says that they're not, like, too into the business side of things, like, that's a pretty, like, industrious path to go down, and very I don't know, just very motivated, I guess, in terms of just, you really put a lot of eggs in different baskets to almost ensure success. So it was a good approach.
Yeah, I mean, social media came accidentally from the calisthenic world, acro yoga world. And then once I graduated PT school, I wanted people to know that I knew more than just what I could do with my body. Mm. And so that's when I switched my name over to Doc Gen Fit and started educating, because people were already on my page. So let me try to do something. And so that's, you know, that I never intended to be a business either. That was just because people are following me. This is what they're asking for. Here's what I'll show. And then, you know, going and getting my own clients, it was just because I saw this monotony starting to happen in a clinic where one of the best physical therapists was just starting to do the same thing on every single person. Mm. And as much as he would mentor me and tell me about specific things, he wouldn't actually put that in practice. And I thought, how sad. Like, you just start to fall into the same pattern of you treating every single person the same and they're not really getting the best results. And that's not the environment that I want to be around.
Yeah, I feel like when we talk to PTs, there's always a sort of like, there's so many different struggles, whether or not like they're in a clinic where, you know, they're pounding out tons of different patients, like kind of like a warehouse where it's like 15 minutes. They're on the bike, they're doing some stim, they're doing some ultrasound, and then they're out their way after they give them like a packet of exercises and they go through that. Or they're like struggling with the confines of like being with like an insurance-based program where they can only take insurance and they can't really treat outside of what the insurance program wants them to do. And so it seems like rather than being stuck with all the confines of being a PT, you branched out and figured out ways where you can still treat the way you wanted to treat, do things the way you wanted to, and actually kind of blaze your own path, basically.
Essentially, which is hard, I think. I mean, we need, you know, the PTs who will grind it out. We need the PTs who will take the insurance, you know, and that's what's hard. And that's why I always try to look at it too with my clients in person. Like, I don't want to see you more than four times. So I don't want you to have to keep coming back week after week and paying for me. I want to set you on a path where you start to understand your body, build that confidence. And if you need more support, you go see a personal trainer. But I really didn't want to continue to see patients over and over again, because it is expensive and it is hard to go the cash pay route and see someone more one-on-one and not worry about insurance. So it's a tough struggle. We need PTs who are willing to grind it out. We need PTs who are willing to be in that space. And I think having PTs who want to think outside the box and do things a little bit differently is also such a cool aspect that we just get to see the whole, you know, a wider prospect of what physical therapy is capable of providing.
Yeah.
Would you say, I mean, knowing what you know now, and like, if you were to start over again, like, what would you tell like a younger aspiring PT or a younger gen, like how to basically kickstart their journey as a physical therapist?
You know, I don't know that there's much that I would change or anything, but I would just say staying open to the opportunities that might present themselves, and knowing that, you know, you don't have to do it on anyone else's timeline. It gets to be on yours, and it gets to be based on exactly what you're pursuing and what you feel passionate about. I think, you know, there was a lot of voices telling me leave the clinic before I left the clinic, but I'm glad I didn't. I did it when I felt ready, when I felt I've built up my clientele. I know that I feel stable in what I'm creating. And I left once I felt really called to. And that was actually, I happened to do a shoot for a magazine, and it happened to be on a Saturday. But in my mind, I was like, what if this wasn't on a Saturday? What if this was, I was asked to do it during the week and I can't do that because I have work. So it was literally after that shoot that I text my bosses and I just said, you know, I need to talk on Monday. And I essentially gave a week notice because I just felt like I had so much I needed to figure out in terms of documentation, in terms of legalities, and making sure that I was all set to go on my own and be really secure. So, and I already had my own clients. So I was like, this is what's going to happen. And I'm so glad, again, that I did it when I did it. I'm so glad I launched online when I did. It was just everything fell into perfect place as I was ready. And I feel like that came more naturally. It spoke to my audience in the way that I did it. It just everything happened when it was supposed to for me. And I'm so glad I didn't listen to outside voices pushing me before I was ready.
That's awesome. I love that. It's like you can take advice from mentors and everything. You can take everyone else's story and hear it and learn from it. But at the end of the day, listening to your gut is always going to guide you in the right direction, and just knowing what is right for you and whether that was right for other people before you, it, you know, that doesn't really matter. So that's really cool. And you have clearly made the right decision because you're helping so many people right now. I think about this all the time with social media, and, you know, we actually did an episode a couple weeks ago about our biggest pet peeves in the fitness industry, but I think this can relate to PT as well. And one of them is kind of just like, this was like a sub pet peeve, but it was kind of like when old school trainers or physical therapists kind of like poo-poo on social media and say that it's not a good way of educating, that people need to go to courses and certifications, and like kind of make it seem like using social media as an educational platform is silly, and they kind of like put it down. Mm-hmm. And that's so frustrating because, yes, it's important to go to courses and get your hands on people and like really make sure that you're understanding how this works in practice. But using social media as a way to educate and to provide value to people who might not be able to go and do those things, you're reaching so many more people. Like if you were going to lead a workshop in person, you might get a couple hundred people there. You have 700,000 people that you get to reach on a daily basis on your social media account. You're helping so many more people with your daily content. And I just think it's really frustrating when people start to try to put that method of teaching down.
Yeah, I agree. And it's, you know, there's always going to be a different way for different people. And again, it's all needed, right? It's needed to do the in-person things. It's needed to get the hands-on. And it's also needed to get the education so that even if people do go in person or have a trainer or a therapist, they're able to ask better questions because now they've seen something that maybe sparked something. Well, now I can ask about this and I can take my health into my own hands rather than just following blindly what someone might be telling me in person.
I love that because you also don't know what you're going to get when you go to see a physical therapist, especially for me early on with gymnastics. I did actually, probably because I had a lot of injuries that led to surgery, I did end up having a lot of physical therapy. And, but you know, you don't really know, you get assigned a physical therapist. You don't really get to do any research on that person. You don't know what their background is. And my physical therapy was literally sitting on a bike and just like doing that for 10 minutes, then electric stim, like Jason was saying, ice, and then like a couple exercises to do at home. And I always just felt like, what is the point of this? Like I could do all of this by myself. But I just thought that was physical therapy. I had no idea what else was available and what else was out there. So that's such a great point, is that at least now somebody can go to a physical therapist and ask, like, what are your thoughts on this? Or can I incorporate this? And if their physical therapist doesn't kind of align with what they think that they might need, they can go find someone else or they can choose a different provider. And that gives you so much more power as the patient.
When we'd work with people at our gym, and, you know, sometimes we'd see people where they were in a lot of pain, and it would be to the point where we would really recommend them seeing a physical therapist. We'd often get a lot of resistance, I think, because they've had prior, you know, experiences where it was kind of like they felt like they were in a factory and it wasn't like the best use of their time. And I think there's a big thing where no one really wants to go to PT. Like, it's not like an exciting thing to do. But I think when you absorb it on social media, it becomes a lot more proactive and a lot more like you're in control. Whereas going to PT, you're like, oh, I have to go to PT. Like, I have to do this. But seeing it on social media, it's just more like, oh, I'm doing this and this is good for me. Like, this is my self-care. And like, it's just much more proactive. And I think it puts you in a different state of mind. And I feel like the end user often gets a really good benefit out of it because they are just more in control of the situation.
And that's what I hope, you know, that's what I hope for every person going in and being able to see that. And that's also why I think it's such a waste of space in social media if physical therapists are spending their time tearing other physical therapists down, mm-hmm. when the whole purpose and the whole goal is to help people and to give them better guidance. So if you don't believe something, you don't need to tear someone down. Just say what you believe so that they now are educated to, when they go see a physical therapist, they can ask these questions or these things that you've talked about. But spending time tearing other physical therapists down, I just, it's so mind-boggling to me, because if we're all trying to help people feel and achieve something better, then what is the purpose in what you're providing? Like, I don't get it.
Well, that was legitimately the pet peeve that my sub story previously was about. It was actually about coaches, but PTs are in the same realm. Coaches tearing other coaches down, as opposed to just offering their own unique opinion and letting it stand for itself. So perfectly said. we are in alignment
on
that.
Too.
I want to share a story with you, because I'm in a group chat with my high school best friends, like my five high school best friends. And one of them was on a plane flying out, and she texts us and she was like, I'm going to read it. She was like, emergency. Does anyone know an emergency neck stretch for a plane? I'm going to die. And I was like, try these out. They should be really doable from your seat. And Jen is really great. And I sent her an Instagram video that you did about neck pain that was all sitting and you were doing some like Mobs. And literally 2 minutes later, she wrote back, okay, this video is changing my life. Seriously, Lauren, it's basically gone. This is wild. And I'm sure that you don't get to experience that, because people are doing that all the time, right? People are sending other people your videos, and they're life-changing in that moment for that person. And I was like, oh, I can't wait to share that with you, because it was just a cool moment.
Totally. That meant a lot to me. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah. I mean, do you get people saying things like that to you all the time on social media?
Yeah. And it truly is like the most heartwarming thing, and really cool to also know that like you got help from one of the posts. Mm. Like, you know, you didn't even go in and do a plan or a program. Like, you just tried something and it happened to work for you. That's incredible. Because I can't guarantee, you know, what I post is going to be what everyone needs. I mean, never.
Right.
So the fact that someone can, and I've had people say, you know, oh, I took one of your knee posts. I did it for 6 weeks and felt a change. And I'm like, you implemented one post, which is the key, right? That's our goal of like consistency and trying something every single day and finally seeing the result. I was like, that's absolutely wild and incredible. And I think the best story that I had from that was my husband and I were in Hawaii last year, and we had masks on, and we just happened to run into people, I think based on dogs that we were around. And this one guy, you know, was asking what we do, and we were just kind of talking, and he was like, oh yeah, I actually like have gotten help from a physical therapist online. Like, I had a bad neck thing, and I started following one of the videos, and I did it consistently. And 2 weeks later, like, my neck pain was gone. I was like, that's so amazing. Can I see like who you were following? And there he goes, types in Doc Jen Fit. And I was like, oh my God. And I pulled down my mask. I was like, hey, that's me.
That's awesome.
It's so cool that there was such a genuine interaction of like, he had no idea that it was me. And then he told his story of how he got help from one of the posts. It was just like, I was blown away. So that's that, like, was like one of the coolest experiences.
That's like those like YouTube videos where it's like, they have a fake interviewer interviewing people on the street about like an artist, and like the artist is standing right there.
Exactly.
One of the, I think one of the best parts about your posts is that they are very empowering to people. It's not like going to a physical therapist where they're doing something for them, whether it's doing a massage technique or a manipulation or ultrasound and ice and whatever. It's like, no, they're actually doing the things themselves. You're like, no, you can do this. You have the keys, you're in control. And obviously there's so many different factors that go into pain, and mm-hmm. having confidence with an approach is going to make a huge difference in the actual end result. So I think, your posts have been very empowering and inspiring for people.
Thank you.
So I know a lot of our listeners are busy individuals who might not think that spending 30 to 40 minutes on mobility drills or just doing mobility training in general is important. And I know that, like, yes, you talk about a lot of different areas of the body, but you do have a heavy focus on mobility and improving your mobility. And can you talk to our audience a little bit about why improving your mobility is important, some of the key reasons that this is something that maybe people should put a higher priority on?
I mean, really, our mobility is our foundation. And if we're lacking where we're moving our body into, and then just trying to strengthen on top of that, or trying, you know, that's where we start to build up aches, pains, and compensations, because our body's like, oh, I don't have this range of motion, so let me kick on over here so that I can help out in the low back, or I can, you know, and our body starts to, and it's pretty smart, so it's going to naturally work on its own to do that. But if we're then going back and saying, okay, where am I restricted? Where is my mobility lacking? And mobility meaning not just stretching, because a lot of people will still reach out, well, will your stretching routines just like help me? And I'm like, well, it's not just stretching, but, you know, mobility being that, can you actively move your body into these different ranges of motion? So rather than just having a strap and pulling the leg back in a hamstring, but can I now lift my leg and can I hold it? Can my quad work and be really strong in different positions? And so being able to set that foundation in the body is so incredibly important. And this, like an example would be, you know, can you lift your arm overhead with a straight arm? And if it doesn't go all the way overhead, or if you feel like you have to arch, well, what do you think is happening if you're doing shoulder press or you're hanging on a bar and you're forcing your shoulders into range of motion that they're not really ready and set up for? Same with push-ups. If you can't get your wrist back into a 90 degree position, well, what do you think is happening every time you put your hand on the floor to do push-ups? Of course you have wrist pain. Of course, like these things are bothering you. So it's really, can we go back and set our foundation so that we can continue to move forward and feel less aches and pains and be able to move more freely within the body?
Excellent explanation. I already want to start moving. So one of the things that we are always trying to do on this podcast is set sort of realistic, reasonable expectations for how to approach everything when it comes to health and fitness, because so much out there is really intense. Like, you have to do an hour of mobility a day if you want to see a difference, or like you have to eat this many calories if you want to lose weight. And it's all just very, it's very dogmatic. It can be very black and white. And so what are some things that you can provide people, like quick tips, ways that they can start to easily and really manageably incorporate some mobility training just into their daily routines?
Well, I think what's really important to continue to remember is that if the end result is to move better as we're aging and as we're older and being able to pick up grandkids or run with people or hike still, well, then the immediate, what happens in the next 24 hours or the next week, you know, shouldn't really be our focus. So it's not, what can I do in the quickest amount of time? Or how can I hammer this in to see the result right now that I need to see? But it's really about, how am I taking care of my body on the across a lifespan? How am I really exploring and continuing to move into this? And we know that if you commit to, I'm going to do an hour a day of something, you're probably going to fall off track, especially when it's like mobility related, right? It's outside of a fun workout. You're not feeling the sweat. You're not feeling the results right away. So if you try to do something and say, oh, I'm going to do this for an hour, three times a week, chances are you're going to fall off. Unless you're going to a class and paying money and showing up there, if you're trying to do it on your own and put this huge goal on yourself, it, like, life gets in the way, and life is messy, and we get to acknowledge that. So how can we then start just sprinkling things in that might take a lot longer to see the result, but in the long run, you're going to get to your end result, your goal of living longer and not feeling like you're hunched over, you can't move, you can still do the stairs when you're older. Like, that should be the ultimate goal that we're really focusing on. So, you know, starting to like, what's one thing I can do in the morning before I get out of bed? What is a couple things I could do before I do my workout? A couple things afterwards, maybe two things before I go to bed, you know? And if we could just start sprinkling in these little movement practices, over time, you're going to start to see and feel a result within the body, really, especially if you start something first thing in the morning. Again, it doesn't have to be this beautiful influencer 10-minute routine every time, right, that has the same exercises. But if it's one thing that you remember to come to, or you're doing a pec stretch as you're brushing your teeth, or just something that really kind of opens the body, gets you in a different position. And I like to say, especially those who work throughout the day, you know, the worst posture is the static posture that we hold ourselves in. It's not the position that you're in. It's really the sustained position that is what's killing us. And so what we need to do is put ourselves in different positions, which means, especially for those who work at home, if you're working at a computer, can you lay on your stomach sometimes? Can you sit on the floor and work at a coffee table? Can you put your body and yourself in different positions? That's mobility training. If you're sitting on the floors crisscross, you're doing mobility while you're also getting some work in. And so, or if you are at an office and sitting at a desk, can you take little breaks and open up your back and twist or stand or do something different within the body? The more that we can just start sprinkling these in, that's how we're going to become more conscious of how we're moving and how we're carrying ourselves throughout life.
That's perfect advice. And I love that idea of incorporating it into what you're already doing, because that can be the struggle, is like setting more time apart from your everyday life. I mean, I know for us, like, we've got the two kids, we've got the business, like, to set aside time for the workout alone is hard enough. And like, okay, now we have to add on an extra 20 to 30 minutes of this and an extra 20 to 30 minutes of this. And everybody is always kind of like throwing stuff at you as like, this is important, but this is important too. And you just start to feel overwhelmed. And so I love the idea of saying like, you're brushing your teeth. You're going to do that every day. Try brushing your teeth in a squat. Try doing a stretch. Like, I love that, because it doesn't take any more time than what you're already committing to, but you get to then just reap the benefits over the long term. That's awesome.
I love listening to experts in other sort of areas, because there are always just like similar themes of like, I feel like a lot of the times people put these like massive expectations on themselves and like expect to achieve these really difficult goals. Like people don't just mobility train, they want to do a split. They want to do these like, you know, like very difficult skills, and same things with fitness or losing weight. Like it's always just like this huge outcome. And I feel like people that have been doing this for a long time, that are coaches and have been experts in this field, they know how to set expectations. They know how to tell people that play the long game, focus on consistency, focus on your process. You should actually enjoy this. Like, you shouldn't just like force yourself to do this to achieve this certain outcome. And it's nice to hear that you're like, you know, instead of just doing 30 minutes of mobility per day, it's like, just try to fit it into your normal routine. Don't tie things down to certain outcomes that you have in mind, and just enjoy it.
Yeah. I mean, that's should be the goal. And usually I know it's hard to enjoy something you're not quite good at.
Yes.
So that's why starting small and just sprinkling it in is what's so important.
Yeah.
You know, oftentimes when people are talking to us about when they're lifting and things are starting to slow down a little bit and they're plateauing, we often talk to them about like, you know, how's your sleep? How's your nutrition? How's your stress management? Basically, things that aren't necessarily tied to lifting weight or fitness in general. But we like to talk about things that maybe are overlooked or maybe underrated. What are some underrated ways you can improve mobility that isn't necessarily stretching, but more of like a holistic look at your life, I guess?
100%. We have to come back to the breath and how we're naturally breathing throughout the day. I know that I feel like Dom and I hammer this in at nausea. So people who might listen to me regularly are like, okay. But it's so incredibly important, because stress is rampant within our lives. Just everyone has something that's, whether you're getting up early and hearing your alarms and then sitting in the car and going in traffic and then coming home and having the screaming, like there's a lot that happens throughout the day that can increase stress. And subconsciously our body starts to respond to that. And we start to kind of hold ourselves a little bit higher into our chest, into our upper traps. And we start to breathe vertically rather than breathing horizontally into our rib cage. And so, and we should really only be using these neck muscles if we're running and sprinting or we're doing a super hard workout. Like, they shouldn't be helping us in our rib cage expansion unless it's absolutely needed. And so getting people to find where their breath is coming from, wrap their hands or a towel or a sweater around their low rib cage and take some conscious breath. Can I expand that towel? Can I get my rib cage to expand laterally, not my belly, but my rib cage? Can I look in a mirror and see, does my neck want to like fire every single time I take a breath in? Do my shoulders want to rise? Can I do a longer exhale than I do a inhale? Can I close my mouth more throughout the day and breathe through my nose? All these little things have a huge impact on what we're feeling and the tightnesses that we're feeling throughout the day. So if we could just start to make those little changes And that's awareness. So that's sitting in traffic and wrapping one hand around your rib cage and saying, where am I breathing from? That's, you know, going to bed and feeling your rib cage and saying, can I calm down and feel my breath into my rib cage? And it doesn't have to be mindfulness or meditation. It's just coming back into your body and starting to reduce those tensions and those stressors that are going on naturally. And when we start to improve that, you're going to actually start to see your hamstrings let go. Your chest isn't feeling so tight. Your back doesn't feel like it needs to grip all the time. All of these things start to naturally let go the more that we start to implement that simple awareness of breath.
For those people who have no idea about optimal breathing mechanics, diaphragmatic breathing and all that, do you have any go-to drills where you can really, because I mean, a lot of people, they are breathing in that exact same pattern that you've been talking about for, mm-hmm. you know, many, many years, and it's really tough to break them right. out of that pattern. Do you have any drills that give them a lot of feedback to breathe into their stomachs and expand their rib cage in the manner that you just talked about?
Yeah. I mean, I think putting your hands on the sides of the rib cage and giving it a little squeeze and then saying, can I breathe into my hands and can I move my rib cage as I take a breath in? And then do I feel it come back together as I breathe out? So whether that's your hands, wrapping a towel, wrapping a sweater, and having a little bit of a tight squeeze so that you can feel that feedback from that rib cage. And also realize like it's the entire rib cage. So even with my Gen Health community, I had them do it a little bit higher and see like, can I still have my neck turn off, but get my rib cage to expand even higher where my shoulder blades are. So just starting to feel that in your hands can be really powerful feedback of what's happening. And then we'll naturally start to put that into movement because that's really important in movement as well. So your upper traps aren't doing the only firing or you feel your glutes actually working, you know, all these things that people say, oh, I have gluteal amnesia or I can't feel this. It's like, well, you can, you just have to get back into, you know, that basic foundational understanding.
Definitely. Awesome. So the news is out there officially on social media, but you are expecting a baby boy in January. We're so excited for you. I mean, I know that it hasn't been an easy road to get to this point. And thank you for being so vulnerable and for sharing kind of your whole journey through everything, because it's been really powerful for a lot of people to be able to see. But we are very happy that things are going well this time around. And I'm wondering if you have any like specific things that you've been doing to kind of prep yourself in terms of mobility and strength training, some little things that you're doing on a daily basis to try to get yourself ready for all the changes.
You know, I'm continuing to work out and listen to my body. I'm dropping weight as I go further in. But I'm still working out. I'm actually following one of my own programs on Gen Health, which is the Full Body Low Impact Plan, because it gives me, I modify the core and I do something different, but it gives me core and mobility, a lot of mobility, and it gives me strength workouts that I know that I can get to on a weekly basis where I don't have to think about what I'm doing or program it out, just have it already available. So I've been doing that, and I show my pregnancy modifications and highlights on my page so that I can hopefully help inspire other mamas that, you know, you can move, you can lift weights, it's okay, it's safe. You just get to listen to your body and continue to provide for you and your babe in that way.
Awesome. I love that. Well, can you tell us where people can find you, where people can support you, and the places that you like to hang out and the things that you think would be the most helpful for people?
Yeah, I mostly on social media, on Instagram, I would say at Doc Jen Fit. I do have a TikTok, Doc Jen Fit, and YouTube, Doc Jen Fit. YouTube has a little bit long form educational information. My husband and I, who's also a doctor of physical therapy, we do the Optimal Body podcast together. And then we have our platform that we just released that is Gen Health. So gen.health, not .com, is where you find like all of our information. We've condensed into one platform to really help people just feel like they could be guided on a plan that's simple, easy to attain, 10 minutes a day, and gives them an idea of how they can start stepping into their body.
Awesome. Thank you so much for giving us your time. We're so, so appreciative. And we know you are very busy. So we very much appreciate you being here with us. We know our audience is going to get so much out of this episode.
Thank you, guys.
Stick with us for our top 3 takeaways from today's episode. All right, we are fresh off our interview with Doc Jen Fit. That was so much fun. We've been following her on Instagram and engaging with her on Instagram for a long time, so it was really cool to be able to see her face-to-face through the camera.
Yeah, I mean, we've been making content, I feel like, at around a similar time frame as her. So it's interesting that this is the first time we've actually been interacting on like a virtual meeting sort of level. So it was really cool to just actually interact in as close to real life as possible. And it's great to be able to connect with people who we've been following for quite a long time.
Yeah. And it's really, we love to be able to talk to people who are, you know, in different arenas within a similar space, right? So mm-hmm. she had so many great points of view that are so relatable to what we do, but just from more of a like a physical therapy
lens.
Yeah, exactly. So we want to go over and expand on our top three takeaways from the interview. So let's get into the first one.
Let's do it.
So the first one was that you can sneak mobility training into your daily life.
I loved her answer here because well, maybe this is kind of selfish, but it echoed a lot of sentiments that we've expressed throughout our reasonably fit sort of like podcast principles. And, you know, one of our principles is to have fitness fit into your life rather than fitting your life into fitness. And I feel like her answer.
Almost. That's almost the principle.
What's our main principle that we always talk about?
Have fitness fit into your life rather than take over your life.
I take over your life. Yeah. I mean, it was the same sentiment. I feel like it actually rolled off the tongue.
But
better.
I feel like if we want to have a principle, we should be able to like reiterate it.
That's true. That's true. Okay. Maybe we should have a sign that has all the principles.
Oh, it could be like the border of our ceiling. That would be so like
so
1990s.
But anyway, it echoed similar sentiments in that it is just not overhauling your entire life to try to have mobility be part of this huge routine, like spend 30 minutes, an hour a day doing mobility so that you can achieve the splits and do a full toe touch and straddle. It's just, she spoke none of like of specific outcomes. It was more just like sneak it into your everyday life, fit it into pockets of your day that feel manageable to you, and just focus on the consistency of it all. And over time, good things will happen. As long as you're not trying to rush the process and like force your way there quicker than it needs to happen.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I love that she was like, let's look at the big picture. This is another principle we talk about, is zooming out and really trying to see the big picture rather than focus on what I'm doing right now and how is that going to impact me tomorrow.
Right.
And so I thought that was such an insightful way to approach mobility training, and also just helps you to feel like you don't have to be so overwhelmed by it or even feel like you have to spend any more time on it than you're already committing to moving your body. It can just be a part of your day.
Yeah. And I actually feel like I haven't really heard many mobility and movement specialists actually talk about it in that way. And it's similar to us where we're almost like downplaying a lot of the stuff that we talk about because it's a big deal. But the less you make it out to be a big deal, the less pressure and expectation you put on yourself, and then it ends up becoming a more natural and easy way to go about doing things.
Yeah, I think that what you're basically saying is like we have to lower the barrier of entry sometimes, right?
Yeah.
Like if you tell somebody that the only way that they're going to be fit is if they work out 5 days a week and they can't do that at this time in their life, then that barrier of entry is too high and they're not even going to try.
Right.
But if we say there are ways to become more fit by just incorporating 10 to 20 minutes of time a week, like you can improve your fitness with a very small amount to start, and then it gets the ball rolling, and then it's a snowball effect because you get more invested because you actually enjoy it and you actually start to see the results and you feel better and you move better and you want to do it more. So I loved that it wasn't this, you have to do it this way or you won't be able to make any progress.
And I feel like it's a true indicator between someone who is just, let's say, a social media influencer versus someone who has been doing it for a while and have actually talked with many people from different backgrounds and walks of life, because they are much less dogmatic about their approach, where it's like, you need to do this, you need to do that, you need to do this. If you don't do it, then it just means you're not motivated. It's not a priority. It's more of understanding that people are busy. understanding that implementing new habits is really difficult and really challenging, no matter how motivated or disciplined you are, and that lowering the barrier of entry, like you said, is going to be the best way to get people started with whatever thing you're trying to preach, and then preach consistency and focusing on the process after that. And I feel like a lot of people who are in the trenches with their practice are able to disseminate information in that way. And yeah. I thought that Jen did an awesome job of being like, it's not that big of a deal. Just do a couple of these things and then let the momentum build after that.
Yeah. So she mentioned the pec stretch while you're brushing your teeth. Any others that we can throw in there as like ideas for people to just incorporate different mobility drills into their day?
One kind of silly thing that I like to do, and I feel like I do this because of how often I do this in my everyday life now, having kids, is just picking things up and off the floor in various different ways.
Yeah.
I subconsciously starting to do that, to do this. And, you know, I think the traditional way is just to go down, bend, flex at the lower back and pick it up. But what I've been kind of doing is switching things up. Like maybe I'll do a single leg deadlift one time. Maybe I'll do more of like a Jefferson curl to get down. Maybe I'll go into half kneeling, lunge down and pick it up. Maybe I'll try to come down on one leg, almost like a pistol squat style. So basically just kind of like changing the way I go down, up and down off of the floor is kind of just like a different way to get in mobility. And of course, when I do it on one side, I have this like nagging urge to do it on the other side. So then I'll stand back up and do it again on the other side. And it's just a way to incorporate some more mobility while we are with our kids.
I love that. Yeah, I was just thinking about like just using, like making something fun that also makes you like move differently. So I was thinking about like something our kids would find funny is if we did like family dinner on the floor. Mm-hmm. We just like eat on the floor. And this is something that a lot of cultures actually do.
And I was going to say my family would find that really funny because they just do that every day.
I didn't even think about that. But they have great squat mobility. Like there's reasons that that certain cultures have better mobility because they do things like get down and sit cross-legged on the floor more often. And so just creating some more like fun ways of sitting in different postures or being in a different position than what you would normally do that activity in.
Yeah. And I think there's a lots of great social media accounts and YouTube channels out there that do like daily mobility routine in the morning or mobility routines right before bed. And they're like 3 to 5 minute routines that are very, again, easily accessible, very low barrier of entry. And it's, again, taking pressure away. It's not like 3 mobility drills to achieve a split. It's just a very simple routine to kind of get you out of the posture that you've been stuck in most of the day, and it'll help you feel good.
Yeah.
I feel like feel good is always like the word that is in front of the mobility routine. It's like 5 minute feel good mobility routine before bed or whatever.
But it really does make you feel good.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. Just to loosen up. It also helps you to either get in the mode to kind of get into a sleep parasympathetic state, or gets you out of that sort of like deep sleep and kind of gets you into the day. So those are just some ways that you could incorporate mobility into your training. And it's not just like, this is my mobility training. It's just, oh, I'm incorporating some movement and mobility throughout my day, and it's not really impacting my time.
Yeah, totally. All right, awesome. So the second takeaway is that breathing is a major component to improving your mobility. And I feel like we talk about this a lot as well. She was like, I feel like a broken record. But then I was like, you know, I think that we think that we're broken records as professionals. And, you know, when we were running the gym, I think we definitely, people were like, okay, we get it. Breathing, you're always going to make us breathe before every class. You're going to make us breathe before every workout. Our RISE members know there's always a breathing drill at the beginning of every single session. But I don't know if we've even ever talked about it on the podcast, to be honest.
I don't think we have. We talked about it in the previous podcast a decent amount. But yeah, this podcast, we haven't touched upon it. And I think it's almost like when she said it, it's like, oh yeah, we haven't really talked about it in this podcast. So we're excited to kind of elaborate on it even a little bit further.
Yeah. I mean, what she was talking about was she gave some really great specific cues for helping you learn how to breathe properly, because I think sometimes people don't even know what proper breathing mechanics even are. And so knowing that if your shoulders are rising up toward your ears when you inhale and then lowering down when you exhale, that's not really a great breathing pattern, because you're recruiting muscles that are not necessary for breathing, and then you're over engaging them and overusing them, which then can lead to like neck pain, shoulder pain, overuse injuries, essentially, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, this is basically almost everyone does it, unless they've been sort of trained out of it or educated out of it by a professional. And like, it's funny to talk with other professionals like singers or martial artists or people that play instruments. Like, they've all been taught to breathe in this sort of diaphragmatic way, where when they inhale, the rib cage is supposed to expand out. When they exhale, the rib cage comes back in and depresses. And it's very common with all these sorts of different modalities and methodologies. But for someone who hasn't really been trained in this, it's almost the default pattern, which is to breathe up into their neck, their traps rise up, and they're basically contracting all these accessory muscles that should contract when you're doing like high effort stuff. Like if you're deep in the middle of like a HIIT session or sprinting, like those muscles should contribute. But on an everyday, every single breath, those muscles should be relaxed. And you should be breathing in a much more relaxed way, kind of like how a baby breathes, through their diaphragm, expanding their rib cage with each and every breath. And it's a much more relaxed fashion. If you breathe up into your chest and into your neck over and over and over again, you're just basically getting into a state of sympathetic nervous system where you're in this fight or flight mode. And it's going to be really difficult to have your body relax and actually adapt to the mobility training that you bestow upon it. And so if you are tense all the time and your breath is, you're breathing all the way up into your neck and your traps all the time, it's going to be really difficult for your body to be like, okay, I can loosen up my hips, I can loosen up my T-spine, I can loosen up my shoulders. You have to really think about, okay, how can I just get my system to calm down a bit? And the easiest way you can do that is by accessing your breath, by breathing in through your nose, out through your mouth, and breathing diaphragmatically and expanding your rib cage. That gets you into more of that rest and digest sort of nervous system state. And that allows your body to then accept all the mobility training that you are giving it.
Yeah, I love it. And you'll see it in yoga practices. Yes. You'll hear about it in Pilates practices. So a lot of modalities that do try to incorporate more mobility training, they're always talking about breathing. So yeah, it definitely makes sense that that is something that you should focus on. But I think it is an easily forgotten or just kind of neglected component of mobility training.
Yeah, definitely.
Awesome. And the third key takeaway from this episode is that the only bad posture is a static posture. We've heard this a lot as fitness professionals, but you may have never heard that before. And so this was something that she did a really great job of expanding on and speaking about. We just want to give even a little bit more insight into why that is the case.
Yeah, I mean, if you were to visualize bad posture, what you'd probably visualize is someone forward head posture, rounded shoulders, slumped over. And this is like your view of bad posture. And there's a lot of social media posts out there talking about how to improve your posture, how to better your posture. And a lot of it has to do with like upper back strength and pec openers and things like that. And the thing that we liked that Doc Jen talked about is that it's not necessarily that a specific posture is quote unquote bad, but rather staying in one specific posture for too long is the sort of culprit, I guess, for bad posture and potential pain and aches and pains and things like that.
Yeah, so I really liked that she talked about how mobility training, quote unquote mobility training, could be as simple as just laying on your stomach and doing your work, right? Like, it could be as simple as just getting into a different position than what you're typically used to and then just going about your day. And that's training your mobility, because you are not stuck in one posture all day long, sitting cross-legged with your hands at your desk. Like, maybe you uncross your legs and cross them the other way, or you bring your knees up and put your feet on your chair. I mean, I am like notorious for changing positions in my chair every 30 seconds, and it probably is annoying to other people because they're like, can you just sit still? But I'm technically doing mobility training, so and now you can't knock me for it.
For those of you who work at a bigger corporation, it might be just worth reaching out to your HR department or to a manager and asking about the possibility of incorporating a standing desk into your office setting, or even for them to invest in it for your home setting or whatever you have going on. And standing desks are awesome because, again, it gets you out of that standard position where your legs at around 90 degree angles and you're sort of slouched forward. You can set it up to standing, or sometimes what we like to do, Lauren and I, is we actually put it down at the lowest setting and get into a half kneeling posture. We get into a cross-legged posture. We get into just a fully tall kneeling posture.
I've seen you do a full squat, but that's too hard for me.
But basically, again, it's not necessarily that the classic sedentary lifestyle image is bad posture. It's just that we are stuck in it for such long periods of time. So just doing anything different is going to be beneficial and actually considered mobility training, like Doc Jen said.
Yeah. And I think something else to note here is that the classic, like, quote unquote, perfect posture is not a good posture either. Like, it's not just that the classic bad posture isn't necessarily bad posture, but like, I used to have, quote unquote, perfect posture. I was like very straight up and down, and my I just stood like a gymnast. And
Your shoulders were down and back, your head was pulled back, your back basically had zero curvature. It was like a one steel rod from like head to toe, basically.
Yeah. And I actually, like, people would comment on how good my posture was, but I was constantly having like neck and shoulder issues. And once we started to learn more about like movement and mobility training, we realized that I had like zero flexion ability in my upper back. Like, I couldn't round my upper back. And I was like, well, I mean, that's bad posture, so why would I need to do that? And the reality is, we need to be able to access all ranges of motion, because in your everyday life, your body is going to need to be able to get into those positions, because you're not just standing all day or sitting all day. You are going to turn your head to look behind you when you're reversing in a car. Or for me, like, I'm going to turn quickly to catch a football. And if I'm not able to rotate and flex to do that, I'm going to end up overusing my neck or tweaking my shoulder. And that was consistently happening. And then we started to realize, well, maybe my perfect posture is actually preventing me from being able to move freely, right?
Yeah, that's when we noticed it pretty like an exaggerated way. When you would crouch down low to try to catch a football, you almost couldn't. Like, you would reach down with your hands and you'd be like, I can't go any further. So it was either kind of reach down or like fall in an attempt to get it. Now your body is just so relaxed and it flexes forward to catch a low ball, and it's like a much easier endeavor. The other way we noticed it is, and you would always get so annoyed by this, but Lauren's T-spine was so flat that her scapula, her shoulder blades, would kind of pop out. And this is called scapular winging. And I would just, like, when we were standing in line and I was behind her, I would just like grab her shoulder blade.
So
like,
rude.
I'd be like, Lauren, put this scapula back down more flush against your body.
He's like, round your shoulders. And I was like, why would I do that? Like, it was so counterintuitive to what I've been told my whole life. Just like, shoulders down and back, chest up, nice and tall.
But with the scapular winging, it can impact just the way it moves overhead. Shoulder stability can be impacted. You would get knots often in your upper and mid back.
Yes.
And once you start incorporating some more breathing techniques and more T-spine flexibility work and getting into quote unquote bad postures, now you're able to access all different ranges of motion, and now your shoulder and neck are in a much better position because of that.
Yeah, and my movement has improved so much.
Yeah.
So, and my sport, my athletic endeavors has improved. So it's like, I think at the beginning, this is a bonus key takeaway, but at the beginning we asked her, like, why is mobility training important? And she's like, it was almost hard for her to answer, because it's just everything.
Yeah.
It's everything, right? Like, everything you do, you need to, except for sitting at a desk, like, you need to be able to move and access mobility. And I think that when we play a sport or we do a hobby where that is what we're passionate about, we just want to do more of that thing. So for me, like, I would much rather just go out and play more football than I would do 10 minutes of mobility training. But now in seeing that direct correlation from improving my mobility to becoming better at my sport, it's become so glaringly obvious that this is something that I should work on.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So yeah, I hope this episode really gave you some insights on not only why mobility training is important and why you might want to incorporate it into your life, but also how and how you can make it really fit into your life in a very simple way that still has a big impact.
Yeah. So make sure you go check out DocGenFit at DocGenFit on all major social media platforms.
Make sure that you leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to this podcast, and go ahead and hop over onto our Instagram page and leave any questions or notes or comments on today's episode. We would love to interact with you there. It's at Reasonably Fit Pod on Instagram. And I believe that is all we have for you today.
Until next time,
sweat out,
happiness in.